Appalachia, the word that evokes a whole passel of reactions. Everything from the beauty of a mountaintop to trailer parks, drugs, and about everything in between. The Appalachian Mountains are indeed the oldest mountains in the world. They once towered 30,000 feet into the air. They stretch from eastern Canada through 14 states all the way to Louisiana. The folks who live in these mountains have faced an unending number of tragic and just plain odd happenings that cry out for the telling. Hello, I'm Larry Bentley, and I was born and raised in these very mountains by a family who themselves were born, raised, and lived for generations in the heart of the Appalachian Mountains. Come with me and we'll take a look at some of the unending stories that come from within my beloved mountains. And we'll look through the eyes of an old Appalachian at some outside the area as well. Welcome to Season 4 of Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend. Howdy, my good friends. I hope you're doing well today. Thank you so much for swinging by. And happy Easter. Now, you know, one of the questions I'm asked quite often is, what's the difference between West Virginia and Virginia? Now, there's a pretty simple answer for that. Hillbillies. In fact, the Confederate lines and the terrain, if they weren't like they were in Southwest Virginia, you know, back during the Civil War and pretty much still are today, West Virginia would extend all the way to the border of North Carolina along about the Carroll County line somewhere, and westward all the way to Tennessee and Kentucky. There was one final decisive battle that pretty much ended the debate as to whether or not West Virginia will remain Virginia or have its own statehood. Well, among other things, of course, but so grab you a sit down and make yourself to home. Now try not to take up too much of your holiday by telling you about the Battle of Droop Mountain. Now, as we all know, the southern states were mostly governed by what we've all come to know as the Southern Aristocrat. You remember them from our episode, Taken with a Grain of Salt. They saw themselves equal to the Knights Templar, and most had never worked a day in their lives, but somehow by 1860, they were generations into the government all over the South. A lot of the times, the aristocrat would pop off with an idea that he thought was just grand. Most of the time, it was some off-the-wall, out-of-left-field policy that only benefited him and his aristocrat cronies, along with stepping up the oppression of people of color. In fact, the aristocrat butthole that came up with the nonsense was so confident that he was right that his decision about his new wackadoodle policy, that he would put it up for popular vote just to prove he was right. Then, him, along with his buddies, would go down to the local tavern, get a snoop full to celebrate, and go out into polls and intimidate voters. A lot of the times at gunpoint. Then when the question was voted down by the people in spite of it all, the aristocrat would consider the people to be just too damn stupid to know what they want. Then he'd get his aristocrat legislators together and vote to do whatever it was in question anyway. Damn the working man. You know, it don't sound too far removed from the idiots we got in D.C. today, does it? But by 1861, the Southern aristocrats in control of Virginia were fixing to be held in check by the United States federal government for all the nutball legislation that they've been perpetrating on the Virginia populace. Their biggest problem was that the Union had the gall to actually start questioning the legality and morality of slavery, among other things. So the aristocrats got together what they called a secessionist convention. They would be damned if anybody anywhere at any time would tell them what they were going to do. You see, by using a convention for the dirty work, the plebe citizen would be cut plumb out of the business at hand. And the business at hand was to remove Virginia from the United States of America, regardless of what the popular vote might have been, that is, if they had bothered to have one. They knew that a whole lot of people in Virginia were against secession, and they had to do it the sneaky way. In fact, it was not widely known that most of the populations in the South consisted of regular working folks and enslaved people who were against secession, but the Southern aristocrats were in charge, and everybody else could just bite it as far as they were concerned. They were so hell-bent on having their way every time about everything that the spoiled, rotten little brats finagled away to have enslaved people vote in elections while still claiming that they had no rights and were no more than property to them. That's how twisted these people were, folks. And on top of that, or to top it all off, they hid behind the King James Bible, claiming that God himself was on their side. But anyway, after they seceded from the nation, they intended to sign Virginia up for membership in the Confederate States of America. So, on April 17th, they did what they thought would be best for them, with them being plantation, slave owners, and slave peddlers. They apparently thought that they had their fingers on the pulse of the state, or they just didn't give a flip-flop or fly when anybody thought, when they voted 88-55 to secede from the Union. Then, they went about the paperwork for drafting people into the all-new Army of the Confederate States of America. They forgot about one thing when they did all that, folks. They forgot about the Appalachian hillbillies whose forefathers had fought in the American Revolution generations earlier. The hillbillies believed firmly in the Union that their forefathers had fought and died for. They weren't huge plantation owners nor slave traders. They worked their farms and were granted them generations earlier as payment for serving in the Revolution. And they had no use for no damn Southern aristocrat or their policies. That would be the reason that you hear about the Appalachian hillbillies staying to themselves, and you hear about the mountain justice. They had pretty much grown to hate the Southern aristocrat morons and just stayed in the hills where they'd do what was known as bury their own. I don't know how many of you have ever heard that term, but it pretty much means that they were their own preachers, morticians, and even police. They had very little dealings with the government to start with, and let alone after these rich, arrogant punks took it over. The one thing they didn't want was the government involved in anything they were doing. So you can bet your sweet bippy that when the draft notices came in the mail, most of the hillbillies just chunked them in the trash. Some were forced to serve, and I mean literally at gunpoint. They ended up deserting or even finding like-minded hillbillies who were also forced to serve, and they ended up using their training, equipment, and, you know, to get together to form Union brigades and attack the Confederates at every given chance. Yeah, the aristocrats didn't think that went through, did they, folks? So by 1863, the hillbilly-saturated western part of Virginia had separated itself from Virginia to the point that it was accepted into the United States of America as a state of West Virginia. There was still a problem. The Confederate states still claimed that West Virginia was actually Virginia, and they weren't going to give it up without a knockdown, drag-out fight. Once again, the aristocrats were right, in their own minds, that is, so they intended to fight to drag West Virginia back, right down to the last drop of, well, whoever was on the battlefield doing the bleeding, their blood. Folks, when you have people who think God is behind all the damage they wreak on people, that they think that they're not like them, or that the people that they think are not like them, you got a bunch of dangerous people to deal with, because they won't stop until, by golly, they are dealt with. Now, being that the terrain of West Virginia was what it was and still is today, the rebel army had a toehold on the Pocahontas area there in West Virginia. They were using the Virginia-Tennessee Railroad that ran along the new state's southern border for military transportation, meaning that they were hauling anything from troops to cannons to food for the Confederate Army. And as long as they held the railroad, the Confederate Army would stay in West Virginia and would be a general pain in the ass to West Virginia all over the place. And that's what they planned on doing. In fact, they planned on undoing West Virginia and redoing it as Virginia altogether. Folks, I'll be right back. You're listening to Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend with Larry Bentley. Now, by the fall of 1863, Union Department of West Virginia Commander General Kelly, along with about every person in West Virginia, had a gut full of the Confederacy and ordered and he ordered Brigadier General William Averill to attack the rail line. The main goal of capturing Lewisburg, West Virginia, was what they were after. General Averill was the best man for the job, since in months prior, he and his brigade had already launched raids into the region and knew the territory. And folks, if you've ever been there, you'll know just how important that little bit of knowledge is. To General Averill's attack, General Kelly assigned a mounted brigade under General Alfred Duffy to help take Lewisburg. So, early on the morning of November 6, 1863, General Averill left his camps and moved toward the Confederate lines on Droop Mountain. His plan of attack was to send a force to divert the Confederate attention to his left and then the main attack to his right, which was on top of the mountain. Once in position, General Averill started bombarding the southern lines around 11 o'clock in the morning, but inflicted very little damage. And you know, now by bombarding, I mean blast the whole place with cannon fire and mortar shells, which were pretty much actually fired from cannons anyway. But they were kind of a hit-and-miss deal. You didn't have the smart bombs or anything like that back in. You just kind of fired and hit what you hit. But by 1:45, General Averill's right wing led into the Confederates' left. Seeing that the Union forces on the right were ripping into action, he ordered his remaining three regiments to attack the Confederate center on Droop Mountain. The Union army charged up the mountain and faced deadly fire from the Confederates on top. After reaching the Confederate lines, things went to brutal hand-to-hand combat, which led to a Union victory on that front. There was just too many of them to fight off. Around the same time, Union forces on the right began steadily pushing back the Confederates. At around 3 o'clock in the evening, General Averill received word from his Signal Corps that of the crumbling of the Confederate line and decided to move his last reserve on the Confederate left. Folks, this was the all-new fighting technique back then. You basically outflanked, and then, by golly, outflanked again. That lasted even into World War I. Always hitting them where they were most vulnerable, you see. So even when they were dug in, it was pretty much a turkey shoot after you got flanked. So the Confederates were finally overrun and started falling back. That means that they were running ass over tea kettle to get the hell out of there. By 4 o'clock, the battle was pretty much over, with the Confederates falling back toward Lewisburg. To make matters worse, Confederate General Eccles received word that General Duffy's column was only 18 miles from Lewisburg, and he was hell-bent for leather to get there, which was barely defended, of course, because they hadn't had time to dig in. After a grueling night march, General Eccles managed to get to Lewisburg, but due to the condition of his men, he decided to run further south toward Virginia border, and he was hurting folks. The Union captured Lewisburg, but they failed to capitalize on their success and stopped there. Since General Eccles' army escaped capture or complete destruction, the battle was officially considered a failure, since the Virginia and Tennessee Railroad stayed in operation. Well, for the time being, at least. If the Union had kept going, there's a real good chance that the West Virginia border would be at North Carolina, somewhere around Carroll County and west toward Tennessee and Kentucky. Droop Mountain was the largest battle in West Virginia and was one of the last major battles during the war. General Averill had led a final raid on the Virginia-Tennessee Railroad that proved successful the next month. After Droop Mountain, all Confederate attempts to control West Virginia was freaking over with. Now, that's why to this day, you'll hear a good old West Virginia hillbilly say, "West by God, Virginia." Of course, the proper method for saying that is that phrase is to, you know, follow it up by spitting on the ground like you're daring somebody to try to come take it back again. As we all know, the Southern aristocrats got their asses handed to them by 1865. You'd have thought they might have got the idea that folks just wasn't going to put up with things that they were trying to do. But no, they created the boss system of politics, which is sometimes called the old boy system. Now, if you want to know more about how that worked out for them, listen to my episode on the Battle of Athens, Tennessee. Yeah, it took another ass whipping to get the message across. I reckon that pretty much finishes up for today. And now, as much as it might seem like it, I'm not embellishing anything here. This is how it happened from an Appalachian hillbilly point of view. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, please rate and review the podcast and throw us a few stars on whatever podcatcher you're listening on. And don't forget to subscribe or follow whichever one they do there. Come on over to Facebook group Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend Podcast where we talk Appalachian or about anything else you want to bring up. Happy Easter to y'all. God bless you for sticking it out, and thank you so much for listening. And I'll be back real soon with another Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend, and I'll see you then.